Cindy Crawford, the art of dunking for Home the Bell Tolls. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. I'm just going to go out and I'm just going to go ahead and say it, Jeff. I got the 3 a.m. wake ups.
You do?
I got the 3 a.m. wake ups. I've had the 3 a.m. wake ups for a while now.
Stress wake ups? Is that what you're talking about? Like waking up at 3 a.m. and being stressed out and not being able to sleep?
Well, here's the thing. I don't wake up in a feeling of stress.
Okay.
I just am awake.
Just happy to be here. Just like, just, let me see that sunrise, baby.
Well, I wouldn't say happy to be here either. I would say it's very neutral. I would say neutrally, I wake up at 3 a.m. I have no editorial opinions on this. I have no, you know what I mean? I have no feelings about it.
I don't understand not having an editorial opinion on that. It feels like to me, waking up at 3 a.m. is awful. That sounds like a torture that my body is inflicting upon me.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I can usually fall back asleep pretty easily. I'm one of those people.
Oh, okay. So you're not like sitting up awake at 3 a.m. No, you just wake up, you check in.
I'm not Ben Franklining or anything. This is not polyphasic sleep. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just...
So what's
the
deal with that then? You wake up at 3 a.m. for what? Just to observe the clock.
Well, that's what I was wondering. That's what I was wondering too. I was wondering, why am I waking up at 3 a.m.? Do you have 3 a.m. wake ups?
No.
No.
I do not. I do not.
You've got the kids now. And so if you're asleep, you're asleep.
Oh, yeah. Precious, precious sleep. I have the 3 a.m. wake up if I hear the kid cry. That's my 3 a.m. wake up. And that, maybe that's why I consider it to be torturous. Because that is an awful feeling of like, oh God, what's wrong? Are they sick? Is there some sort of injury that's happened? They fall out of the bed. Why are they moaning?
I'll say this. I mean, I don't want to be like, you know, when I say I'm completely neutral to it, I mean, I am pretty much completely neutral to it. But I mean, I also would not like to wake up twice. I'd like to wake up once.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to be completely honest.
Right.
And, you know, I said the same thing to some friends. I was like, I've just been waking up at 3 a.m. and everybody followed the same line of questioning that you did. It's like, oh, are you stressed? Are you this? Are you that? And I'm like, no, man, I'm just up at 3 a.m. You're not up at 3 a.m.? And they're like, well, I am, but I'm stressed.
Yeah.
You know, right. or I'm anxious, or I have night terrors, or I had a bad dream or something, you know?
Right.
So it turns out a lot of people are waking up at 3 a.m., but I'm the only one that's sort of, I'm one of the only people that's like neutral to it. I do have one other person who's like, I feel like at one point I was stressed. You know, I'd wake up at 3 a.m. stressed, and now I feel like I just wake up at 3 a.m. and it's so normal and natural for my body now that I've forgotten about the stress of it, and it's just routine.
That's just become boring. You're so bored of your own stress.
Yeah, like, so...
You know what the KLF says about 3 a.m.?
It's eternal.
It's eternal.
And, oh man, I used to have all of those track names. I could have gone down a very long path of KLF stuff for you.
KLF! With you. Uh-huh.
Was it Brownsville on the radio or something like that? I forget what it was. I forget. KLF is going to rock you.
Yeah, there it is.
I used to listen to Chill Out to go to sleep. Their ambient album. Chill Out's a great album.
Yeah.
Kids Ask Your Parents about... Kids Ask Your Parents what dance music was like before it was good. Ask your parents what early electronic music was like.
Yeah.
And why it wasn't great.
Where you could like hear the seams of the samples.
Of the amen break. There's just like a little
seam in each sample.
A little click in between each one. Jenna B, who sounds like somebody who would be part of the KLF.
Yeah.
That sounds like maybe their DJ's name was Jenna B.
Yeah.
But no, this is a concerned citizen that was on the Discord. If you'd like to join our Discord, head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns to find out how. She posted an article that's called literally, Why Do We Wake Up at 3 a.m.?
Oh, does it answer your question?
It does, Jeff. It does.
This is great news for you.
Well, it is and it isn't.
I would like for there to be an article for me that says, why do you wake up at 3 a.m.? And it just says, your kids.
Your kids, Jeff, is what it says. It says your kids, you I guess it, comma, it Jeff.
It answered my question.
But before the kids, though, I feel like you were you somebody who would like wake up in the middle of the night?
Not really. No,
no.
I'm a person that, knock on wood, I don't want to jinx anything, but I have never really had a problem with sleep. I go to sleep fast. I sleep long. I've never really had an issue with sleep.
Okay. Well, fucking eat shit and die. How about that?
A lot of other issues, I'm sorry. But not that
I'm
one.
Sorry, but you know, I'm going to be very, look, I have an angry, antagonistic, combative relationship with sleep, and I have my whole life.
Yeah.
We, you know, my whole family, we have the delayed sleep phase syndrome. We have, where our internal clocks are set ahead.
Yeah.
So we're not tired until, it's not insomnia. It's just that we're not tired until two, you know, and we can't fall asleep until then. And we don't want to, we think 6 a.m. is 11:30. Like, it's just an internal clock thing. We're just, like a fucking biological thing. So I've always had problems with sleep. And, you know, now I found out I've had, and this is not just me being LA and saying this, I've had a deviated septum my entire life.
Mm.
I did a sleep study.
That's fine.
And they hooked me up to electronic things.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go in and do the one in the lab, but I did a sleep study. And
did you literally go to sleep in a room?
No, I mean, no, I never had to go into a lab and do it. They sent me home with monitoring equipment.
Oh, that's cool.
So you connect the monitoring equipment to you, and it's so weird. It looks like some fake ass comedy science thing, you know, like in a bad sci-fi movie where they're like, hook this electrode to your finger and this one to your nostril. You know what I mean?
It's amazing that they just trust you to do it right.
Yeah, well, that's what I said. I was like, what if they have you go into a little class with all the other people who can't sleep and have to do home sleep studies.
It's like a traffic school for sleep problems.
It is. It's like, cool. I love that I'm being punished for this. I love that it's a problem and I'm being punished for it. But you go in and it's a little class and they show you how to turn on the equipment and use the equipment. And, you know, they're like, and they do it all like exactly the way traffic school is, because they've done this 1,000 times.
Yeah.
And they're just like, rolling over in your sleep will not ruin the results. If the sensor comes off in the middle of the night, just make a note of it. It doesn't matter if you make a note of what the exact time is, just let us know.
You gotta
and
go
we
to
might
that,
ask you to do it again. Like,
you gotta go to that comedy sleep training school. You know, it just spices things up.
Yo. Did you ever go to a comedy traffic school?
Of course I did. I got a ticket in Los Angeles in the early 2000s. Of course I went to comedy traffic school.
That stuff is such a scam.
It's terrible.
It's such a scam because they're not allowed to be funny. When you get there, they tell you, they're like, we have to do this. We have to go over this in a certain way.
Yeah.
The difference between the comedy traffic school and the regular traffic school is the comedy traffic school was at an Applebee's and I got to order food.
For me,
that was
the difference. The difference was it was a traffic school conducted by an out of work actor. That's the only difference. It's like, oh yeah, I took a couple of improv classes with Groundlings, so now I can do this traffic school called Comedy Traffic School.
There were no jokes.
No.
The dude, ours was a retired highway patrolman who I guess is just kind of funny for a grandpa.
Yeah. Kind of funny, but like, for a grandpa.
But like, he was just, you know,
which, by
like
the way, is Greg Miller in 30 years.
Oh my God. Greg Miller.
Kind of funny for a grandpa.
Yeah. I just feel like it was such a scam and it was more expensive than the regular traffic school. And I was so angry. And this was sleep comedy traffic school where it's like, where they were just, I don't know, they just hit you with seltzer water while you're lying in bed. That's all they do.
Yeah.
they told you, you know, how to do it. And I sat with the thing and I was worried I had sleep apnea or I had some sort of disorder or something like that. And they're like, oh no, you have a deviated septum and you have enlarged sinuses. I was like, you're telling.
I was like, enlarged sinuses would make it easier to breathe.
Well, no, you're thinking about an enlarged sinus cavity.
Oh.
I have enlarged sinuses themselves, so it's all squished up in there. So what they do is they want to take a drill to my sinuses.
Oof.
And then give me a nose job.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was like, that sounds miserable, but I haven't slept in 40 years, so I'm going to do it.
Amazing. Dude, the idea of somebody just like drilling a larger hole in your head seems pretty intense.
Ask any doctor in the 1800s if it's intense, Jeff, and I'm sure they'll tell you, no, it's standard operating procedure.
Exactly.
Thank you very
Relieve
much.
The pressures so the vapors can escape.
Yeah. They do a larger one in your nostril and then just a tiny one in the back of your skull, because what you want is you want a cross breeze.
Yeah, you do. You do want a nice cross breeze.
And you want a nice cross ventilation in the summer. And that's how...
You got to let the vapors in and then let the vapors out.
Yeah. You want to let humors in and vapors out? Or is vapors go in and humors go out? I can't remember which one it is. I have to think of a mnemonic device for that. Anyway.
Hevo. Humors in, vapors out.
Anyway, why are we all waking up at 3 a.m.?
That's a good question.
Well, it turns out that there is a neurobiological reason for this. And I can't believe I didn't think about this, knowing that my body occasionally, if I'm, you know, particularly if I'm not taking my ADHD medication, I have this delayed sleep phase thing that's happened my entire life. Neurobiologically, everything changes at 3 or 4 a.m. when you're asleep, Jeff. Everything. Huh. We talk a lot about like how we need certain kinds of light, like yellow light or blue light or a lack of light or whatever, to actually feel tired.
Yeah.
But it turns out that the sleep cycle is so important that a lot of it is just hardwired into you. I mean, that's why we have jet lag, right?
Right.
Otherwise we'd show up to, we'd travel to another country. It would get dark and we'd fall asleep like birds with a blanket being thrown over their cage.
Wouldn't matter.
Wouldn't matter. But it turns out that a lot of this is hardwired into us. And yeah, it can change. That's why jet lag can go away, you know, but you know, you need external things to change. You need your environment to change, you know? So at 3 a.m., your core body temperature starts to rise. Your sleep drive, sleep drive is just the part of you that wants to sleep. The part of your body that wants to sleep. Sleep is just called, call all of these things sleep drive.
I'm like 98% sleep drive.
I had to upgrade my sleep drive. I didn't have enough space in my sleep drive.
I'm all sleep drive. There's like 2% other stuff. Everything else, and then 98% is sleep drive. That's just all I want to do.
I upgraded to the larger sleep drive immediately. I was like, I know I'm going to need all of this sleep drive.
Yeah, yeah. Never want to run out of sleep drive. You know what I'm saying?
The worst thing is when you get those little pop-ups in the middle of the day that's like, you may want to upgrade your sleep drive. Yeah. I'm like, I know. I know. The melatonin. Your body runs out of melatonin around 3 or 4 a.m.
Now, explain to me why this happens at 3 a.m. Is this 3 a.m. regardless of whether I'm awake or asleep? Like if I stay up to 3 a.m., is that still happening? Or is it 3 a.m. sort of in proportion to when we usually go to sleep?
Now, it is a little malleable, but it is mostly around 3 or 4 a.m. So that's why like on insomnia nights, if you've ever had a really bad insomnia night, 6 a.m., 7 a.m. hits and you're not tired anymore. You're physically exhausted, but you're not tired anymore. You're like, oh my God, there's no way I'm getting to sleep.
Right.
You're like, if I fall asleep now, I could get like an hour or two of sleep before my day starts. But no, that's not going to happen. Your body is no longer ready for sleep. That's the other reason why insomnia feels so miserable, is because your body is still doing sleep things. It's still trying to release melatonin. It's still trying to, slow things down. You're like, your body still wants to be asleep. So at 3 a.m., temperature rises, melatonin is slowing down, cortisol starts, right? The stress hormone.
Yeah.
Right? cortisol is happening because your body wants to launch, is starting to prepare to launch into the day. You need cortisol in the morning.
Yeah.
So if don't talk to me before I've had my cortisol, is what your body is saying.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
I would drink coffee out of a mug that said that. So this has nothing to do with dawn light. This has nothing to do. It has to do with the internal circadian rhythm. This is your circadian clock.
This is a biochemical thing.
Our bodies think that the day and night cycle is so important that they're like, it's just like, we've got our own internal day and night cycle because we've got to predict it. Mm. We've got to be ready for it. We've got to start secreting more melatonin and stuff before it starts getting dark outside. So we are tired and ready to sleep when it's the proper time to sleep.
Interesting.
So all of this is happening. And, you know, the sleep cycle, if you've ever worn one of these, if you've ever worn your Apple Watch or put your phone on the bed to like track your sleep cycle, like, you know, and all of these sleep apps tell you, there's not one big sleep cycle. It's a ton of little sleep cycles, right?
Yeah.
We have light sleep. We have deep sleep. We have like, and then we have like times where we're near almost awake. And this happens all the time. Well, what's going on is light sleep is more common in the second half of the night. We're waking up a little bit every so often anyway. We're doing the cortisol. Our body is getting ready to switch over to wakeful mode. And Jeff, here's where it comes in. Even if I'm not feeling it, it is the state of the world right now. The pandemic and the stress and all of the things that have been happening, the background stress of the pandemic. It turns out that every story we do is actually about the pandemic and probably will be for the next 3 years.
I do not doubt that one bit. Yeah.
Even though, it's kind of like, it's this thing that we're all saying, where it's like, how are we all back at work right now? How are we going to dinner? How are we going to this? There's this little thing in the back of our head, even though the sort of lizard brain fight or flight response to the pandemic is over, we have no more spoons to give to feeling anxious about the pandemic, right? The physical anxiety is gone. Our brain is still like, world not right.
Yeah.
All right, like, it's just a quiet background thing that's happening in all of our minds right now. World not right. And it takes just that little bit at 3 a.m. when your body is primed to begin the wake-up cycle to actually make you go, okay, I'm up.
Interesting. So it's two processes that are sort of intersecting at that moment where your body is preparing for its next wake cycle.
Yeah.
In sleep. It's doing all the biochemical things it needs to do to sort of get ready to prepare you for your day. And also, as that's happening, your brain is sort of processing the stresses of the world.
Yeah.
And the intersection of those two things makes your body go, oh, now is the time I need to deal with all this. I'm ready because I've been preparing to get up. So now is the time.
Yeah. I have chosen that this is how I want to wake up and start my day.
Wild.
And I should say, I want to say in times when it is not the pandemic outside, this sort of 3 a.m. thinking does come from stress, right?
Yeah.
This could just be stress or anxiety or normal. If you're somebody who does, and I have had periods of that throughout my life. I have had periods of my life where I've had, sort of anxiety or nights. There was before I was medicated, there were times in my life where ex-partners of mine would be like, yeah, sometimes you just wake up and you scream. I think I told you about this. Like one time, I would just jump out of bed and run around in circles. I would be so freaked out and I didn't know about what.
Right. And it turns out it was everything.
And I think I told you when Dagger was a puppy, he used to love it because he would be like, we're running in circles. Let's go.
You know, this actually makes a lot of sense to me because I've always sort of interpreted that waking up in the middle of the night from stress thing as being an inability to not address those issues immediately. Like, I can't rest because there is unrest, because there are things to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. And my body says, what are we doing just laying here? There's stuff that you are worried about that you need to figure out, you need to solve. And even if they're unsolvable problems, your brain goes, I got to do this. Now, if that's the case, mm-hmm. then you marry that with your body going, all right, I'm doing everything that it takes to be able to be active again.
Yep.
And you marry those two states and it feels like, oh, your body goes, okay, now's the time. We've got everything biochemically we need to act, and there are things to act on.
Yep.
We can't
This
sleep.
Must be the reason why we've been getting ready to wake up.
Yes. Right.
Is this anxiety attack must be what we've been waiting for.
Right. We need to do some shit. We need to do some shit, and this is the shit we need to do, and now we're ready to do shit.
Yeah, your physiology, the physical part of your physical routines are like, we are prepping for something, and your brain goes, something terrible, and your body goes, this is it.
Yeah. Yeah. DEFCON 5.
This is it. Now, so this is kind of interesting, because then, you know, to dive into the more normal version of this, right? Like, if you are the sort of person that wakes up sort of catastrophizing at 3 a.m., right? Which a lot of people do. It's very common. You know, hypervigilance and stress and depression are linked to insomnia, right?
Yeah.
So what can you do about 3 a.m. wake-ups? One of the things you can do is like sort of cognitive behavioral therapy stuff. You can you have to address the problems of your stress. You have, you know, things like even mindfulness meditation or talk therapy, or even like anxiety workbooks or journaling or things like that, or things where like, let's get this out of your head.
Yeah.
Let's empty this right now, so it's not there at 3 a.m.
Right.
You know, the other thing that's kind of interesting about this is, even though we've been creating, you know, people are like, well, why when I wake up at 3 a.m., is it always about this dark stuff? There's other things that I'm excited for in my life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why am I not waking up like a kid on Christmas?
Right.
You know what I mean? Why doesn't that happen at 3 a.m.? And, the cognitive therapist that wrote this article was like, well, it's interesting. It's another physiological thing, right? Physically, you're at your weakest. You were just sleeping, mm-hmm. right? And you've created this stress hormone and you're ready to get up. But remember, you know, when you first get up, you're not entirely there. You haven't drank any water in like 8 hours. You know what I mean? Like, you're not physically ready to go. So you're already not physically feeling great. Cognitively, you're a jumble. You're a mess, right?
Yes.
Because your conscious mind is not in charge. You're asleep. So this is a time of very low internal resources. And so when you think about that, it's almost like the sleep equivalent to being hangry. You're like sleep sad.
Yeah.
You're not really sad.
You're disinclined to be like a kid on Christmas because your mood mm-hmm. is sad.
Yeah.
You're feeling slow and tired
and out of it. And your body aligns that, and your brain aligns that feeling with sadness.
Yeah. This is we talked about this before, this feeling of the physical manifestation of a mood and the mental state of a mood being sort of a chicken and egg.
Right. And that's why children can't tell whether they're sad or angry or hungry or tired.
Yeah.
Right. It all feels bad.
I feel uncomfortable and I don't know what it is. I got to apply some sort of logic here, but my body doesn't know what the logic is.
I don't understand that I snatched that toy from my sister because it's too hot in the car. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I don't understand that.
Right.
And in adults, we talked about how it's crying at movies on airplanes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the pressure on our chest and like the, you know,
that's what
all
it feels
of this stuff.
Like to be emotional.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I must be emotional right now. Yeah.
I must be crying at Paul Blart Mall Cop on this plane.
Surprisingly poignant film.
It, you know, here's the thing. People want to diss on it, but like the third act comeback for Paul Blart, you know? It really, he arcs. He really does. So the other thing that happens, and this is such a funny thing to me because it's so connected to this childish stuff that we were just talking about. There are other things that we don't have at night when we're asleep, when it's dark. We don't have our social connections. Mm. We don't have our coping media immediately when we wake up, right? We don't have all the cultural stuff around us, and it's dark and it's quiet. So we can't see all of the reassuring things behind, like we can't see the rest of the world. And so we slip into egocentricity. Hmm. When you first wake up, there's literally nothing in the world but you. You don't know what's been going on. You don't know what it's like out there. You don't know. You just wake up. All you know is I've been out for the last long time. And all I know about right now is me.
Interesting. So you're inherently self-absorbed when you come to wakefulness.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? Makes
sense. Yeah. That's wild. So you're just like this selfish, moody asshole at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
You're a dick to yourself. You're just being a dick to yourself.
Yeah. I wouldn't ascribe that. Yeah. It's just...
You're being hard on yourself.
Yeah, you're being hard on yourself.
You're accentuating the negative.
Yeah, you're being real. It's real baby time hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just real baby time hours. So it's like, it's real easy to fall into cycles of worry and cycles of regret and like catastrophizing and playing back bad things that happened over the day. Because you're waking up in a real shitty mood with no resources and nothing to think about but you, because it's dark.
I wonder if merely the knowledge of that could be helpful in dealing with it, you know?
I think so. I mean, when you think about, obviously, this person who wrote this article is a cognitive therapist, so they're saying cognitive therapy helps, but they're also saying that things like meditation helps, and so stuff like that is... The core of those practices are separating thoughts from what is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? The idea that like, we know that something that other people tell us isn't true, but we inherently think that our thoughts are coming from us, even though thoughts can be just as much of a reflexive biological reaction as anything else in our body. Right.
Right.
A ball goes whizzing by your head and you flinch. A certain thing happens to you and your brain thinks, a certain thing happens to you that was bad before. And so your brain thinks this is going to be bad, but it's not necessarily true.
Right.
And a lot of these practices, you know, these therapeutic practices or meditative practices are about being like noticing it the moment it happens. Right?
Yeah. Acknowledging it, accepting it, letting it
pass. You're not traffic. You're the road.
Yeah. Yeah.
So all of those things that people say when you're studying meditation. So it's entirely possible that just knowing this, I mean, it's tough because it's hard to think of anything at 3 a.m. when you first wake up.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if just knowing this and being prepped for it can help even a little bit.
I think that's pretty powerful. I think that, you know, I find in my own sort of anecdotal experience, understanding the structure of something really helps me process it.
Yeah.
You know, if you understand the methodology of what's going on, and maybe this is useful. I mean, I'm not the 3 a.m. wake up guy, but I'd be interested to see if you find it to be a little useful in your night to night.
Yeah. I mean, especially since when I wake up, I'm just sort of like awake now. Like I'm not having it a lot of I'm not having the catastrophizing or whatever, but clearly my body is not cool with the world right now.
Yeah.
So I think for me, it's about, okay, my body is telling me that I am more upset about something than I think I am. And so now I need to kind of drill it and figure out what that is, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's kind of where it works the other way around too, right? Where it's like, I don't think I'm feeling anything. It's like, well, physically it looks like you are. And I find for me, that's sort of like a thing. I found out that recently that ADHD and depression can lead to an inability to feel your emotions or identify your emotions. in certain cases. And so sometimes people are like, what are you feeling? I'm like, nothing. And it's like, okay, but do a head to toe check of your body. And what are you physically feeling?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it can work both ways.
It's interesting to me, you know, that at 3 a.m., it's just like this, it's the earliest possible time that your body is ready to go.
Yeah.
Your body is just like, all right, I'm ready to go now. And your mind has been going, there's stuff to do. And your body's like, nah, not yet. I'm still working on getting everything biochemically ready. And at 3 a.m. it's like, okay, I did it. And your brain's like, okay, we're up.
Well, it's also interesting because it's so funny how much like we laugh about like the old, sleep schedules, you know, that's sort of like, well, is the candles burned out and it's 7:30 PM.
Yeah.
Time to go to sleep. And then, you know, 3 AM it's time to get up and milk the chickens and feed the cows, which is the way you do it. Right. And then, so I'm ready to plow at 5:30 when the sun rises. But your fucking body kind of wants to do that.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I think is interesting about this story, where it's like, I remember when I had to get up every morning, every Monday, I had like a 7 a.m. flight, right? For work.
Yeah.
And so I would get up at like, I'd be like, well, I fly out of the commuter airport, so I'll just get up at 6, you know, and like, nah, baby, your body wants to get up at 3. It's easier for you to get up at 3 than it is at 6.
Yeah. It's wild.
That sucks. Cause what do you do at 3?
It sucks. Yeah. You start milking the chickens and
feeding the cows. But I remember like when I was seeing a trainer, my trainer was like, yeah, I'm up around that time every morning. I'm like, what the fuck, dude?
Cause your trainer's the best of us.
Certainly the best of us.
Yeah.
But also, I guess like, I don't know. You might as well listen to that, I guess, if you can build your life around it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I don't know. How early do you get up now because of children? Earlier or later than you used to?
Way earlier than I used to. We get up. My wife gets up at like 5. I get up about 6:30. One kid, usually Jack, is up earlier with Aaron and hanging out. And then, but Zoe sleeps in. She'll sleep till 7. So I get up about 6:30.
That's
help
nice.
With making breakfast and making lunches and stuff for the day.
God,
it's awful. It's terrible. It's awful. I want to sleep till 9 or 10.
Try getting up at 3, dude. It might help.
Sounds terrible too. But I don't go to bed until 1, you know? So
why are you not in bed until 1? Oh, because you need you time. Because the kids are,
you know, once the kids go in bed, it's like, okay, these precious few hours and I want to extract the most time out of it.
You got to write that novel.
Trying to write that novel, baby. Trying to write that novel.
We're trying to make the most of those hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by write that novel, you mean play Deathloop.
Yeah, play Deathloop is probably usually what I'm talking about. Write that novel is code. Like I've told my friends, whenever I say I've got to go home and work on my novel, or like I've been really working on my novel, that is me. That is my code for, oh God, it has been a totally unproductive week and I cannot handle how lazy I am. Like, you know, I'm just I cannot deal with social interaction right now because I feel guilty about how little I've done in my life.
Well, don't worry. You'll be up at 3 a.m. feeling like you've done nothing with your life.
maybe that's when I actually have to write the novel. Maybe my body is telling me 3 a.m. is the time to get all that work done that I've always wanted to do.
Well, you know, if you read all of these very successful...
Maybe I'm the one that's having a positive reaction and waking up at 3 a.m. Maybe I'm fine.
People say your most creative, productive time is those wee early hours. There's a lot of reports where people say if you wake up early and get it out, that's the most productive time is those 3 hours like pre-dawn. A lot of people swear by that. There's a lot of authors that talk about that.
God, I've read so many books that are like the, you know, the 5 a.m. miracle and shit like that, where it's like, here's how you get up early and live your life better. And every time I read it, I'm like, I think I buy one of those books every year. Maybe. Yeah. Or like go to the library and grab one of those books, at least one of them every year, and read it. And I'm always like, I get halfway into the introductory, you know, you can't write a self-help book without the introductory anecdote.
Yes.
About the person, not me, but a friend of mine, a very good friend of mine used to do this, and I'd ask him why. And he said, you know, or it was my grandfather. Yeah. It was somebody
until that one day when I learned what? wow, it's been right all along. Yeah.
I learned the 5 a.m. secret and you can too. And you get about halfway through that when I'm like, I can't believe I fell for this again. I can't believe I fell for this again because I don't feel good about myself. What an idiot.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I think what we've learned here is that the KLF was right all along.
3 a.m. is eternal.
It's eternal.
And you do have to chill out. They were right on both counts. Hey, you know what's a great thing to do instead of catastrophizing at 3 a.m.? Going and hanging out with some like-minded folks and having some lovely discussions.
You mean over on our Discord?
That's right.
The exclusive Discord to patrons of the podcast over at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
It only costs
a buck a month. It gets you into the Discord, gets you part of the community, hanging out, talking with like-minded folks, cool folks who are probably all up at 3 a.m. with you.
They're all up at, listen, the internet is worldwide and 24 hours a day, baby. Doesn't matter if it's 3 a.m. Somebody on our Discord is ready to talk about bird pranks with you or science news or talk about books or movies. We got channels for everything.
So cool.
Go check it out. And also remember, it's a way to directly support me and Jeff and the show. You know, we don't do ads. We don't do anything like that. And if you head over to the Patreon page, maybe you sign up for the Discord, but maybe you look and you see, oh, they've got other stuff going on. And as I give a little more, I can get bonus audio, extra episodes, video sessions of our recording sessions, like all that stuff.
Cool stuff.
Maybe I'll support these yahoos. I don't know.
We're working toward that goal of 100% Patreon conversion.
That's what we need.
Attainable.
We need 100. If you've ever listened to a single episode of the show, we need money from you every month for the rest of your life.
If just a dollar, if every single person who listens, if we get 100% conversion with a dollar, Anthony and I never have to work again. It'll be amazing.
Would somebody please just think of us? But in all honesty, this is a huge chunk of our income right now. You know, we are freelance in everything we do. So thank you for everybody who has supported us through the Patreon. And thank you everybody for just listening and spreading the word about the show. That is equally important. We do it so people listen to it and enjoy it. Yeah. And we're glad that you do. And give us a dollar a month for the rest of your life. Patreon.com/wehaveconcerns.
Anthony, they laughed. You know, they laughed. The year 1998. The man, Harry S. Stamper.
The inventor of the stamp.
Stamp had been around before 1998, believe it or not.
No, oh, okay.
Harry S. Stamper, played, of course, by the one, the only, the iconic Bruce Willis. A.J. Frost, played by the one, the only, the iconic Ben Affleck. The film, Armageddon. The idea.
His name was Harry Stamper in Armageddon. His name wasn't Bruce Willis.
No, his name wasn't Bruce Willis. I mean, we all called him Bruce Willis.
Called him Bruce. There's real Bruce Willis. And then there's Bruce Willis in Armageddon is what I called him.
Yeah. No, that's accurate.
I know Harry who John McClane is.
John McClane also.
I know Bruce who John Willis. McClane is.
Yeah.
I know who Hudson Hawk is. It's right there in the title.
Exactly.
And I know David Unbreakable. Isn't that his name? David Unbreakable?
What about Bill Moonlighting?
Bill Moonlighting. but I did not, I forgot that his name was Harry S. Stamper. I call all of those actors by their names in Armageddon.
The S, of course, stands for Stamper. So it's Harry Stamper Stamper.
Harry Stamper Stamper.
The idea that they all laughed at, you know, as they were entertained, as Michael Bay brought them into a fantasy world of sights and sounds and excitement, the idea that they all laughed at was that one day NASA might need to ask a ragtag group of deep sea drillers to fly to an asteroid, plant a nuclear bomb, and blow that bad boy to kingdom come. Why? Why, Anthony? Save Earth.
Well, okay, but that's not what we laughed at. I'm gonna if I could extrapolate what I believe we laughed at the time, Jeff, and I think I may already know where your story is going. It's not so much the idea that one day we would need, honestly, if we're being 100% real, blue collar people desperate for work in a terrible economy to take on a very dangerous and underpaid job, mm-hmm. but move that job to space because they can't do it on Earth any longer because we've destroyed the Earth. That's not what we laughed at. That's no. inevitability. What we laughed at is that you could train them to be astronauts faster than you could train astronauts to use a drill.
Right. Yes. But it turns out, Anthony.
Yes.
The idea that we laughed at, that you could blow up an asteroid using a nuclear bomb and then it would save Earth.
That's also not what we laughed at.
When we all laughed. We all laughed. Ha, 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 we said.
Who did you see Armageddon with? Who were you talking to when Armageddon came out? What were you laughing at about Armageddon? There were things we were laughing at. Number one, the animal cracker scene. What a dumb scene. Number two, training the drillers to be astronauts faster than you train astronauts to use a big drill.
Steve, which astronauts Buscemi.
Use, they use giant equipment all the time. They have to run a fucking space shuttle. And then number three, Steve Buscemi riding that thing and pretending like he was in Dr. Strangelove. That was very funny.
Steve Buscemi as Rockhound.
His name was Rockhound?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he was a rock. He fucking loved rocks.
He could find rocks anywhere?
He would find them. He's Rockhound. He would blow that shit up.
The whole Earth is made of rocks. It's not. Yeah. You can't call him Rockhound because he finds rocks. Armageddon's a terrible film.
Yeah.
Did you ever listen to?
You must have been one of the people that was laughing in 1998.
I was. I think I was also working at a movie theater and laughing at Armageddon all the time.
I was also working at a movie theater.
Jeffrey,
but who's laughing now, Anthony? Who's
me
laughing
still.
Now? When
I just want to say before we get into the science of this, I'm sorry. I know there's a real thing here, but Jeff, Armageddon is so bad. I did at one point own the Criterion edition of it. Now, and there's a reason for that, and that reason is: have you ever listened to Ben Affleck's commentary track
it's gold.
On Armageddon?
It's gold. It is worth the price alone.
He thinks Armageddon is the dumbest fucking movie.
It's gold to listen to.
He
him.
Does not hide it.
Yeah.
And I love that.
It's so great.
That's the fourth thing I was laughing at.
AJ Frost himself taking down the
movie.
Liv Tyler as Grace Stamper.
Liv Tyler as Liv Tyler.
Billy Bob Thornton as Dan Truman. Owen Wilson as Oscar.
God, there's nothing.
As General Kimsey.
There's nothing. Keith David is Keith David in a military uniform.
Jason Isaacs
as
Jason Isaacs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Michael Clark Duncan as
the Green Mile.
We all remember who Michael Clark Duncan played. Of course, the character Bear. We all remember Bear. Bear. It's an unforgettable film.
He was the president in The Fifth Element, and that's the best. That's the
That wasn't no,
that was
Clark
tiny.
Duncan.
No, that was Tiny Lister, wasn't
yes.
it? That was Tiny Lister. What do I like Michael Clark Duncan in? Daredevil?
Green
no,
Mile?
That can't be right.
Green Mile.
It was Green Mile.
Yeah.
Green Mile, Daredevil.
Daredevil, yeah. I mean, the Ben Affleck Daredevil. Wow, they worked
the
together
AJ
twice.
The AJ Frost Daredevil.
Yeah, AJ Frost
the,
as
the AJ Frost
Daredevil.
Version of Daredevil. No, I want to say that there's something about Michael Bay.
He's a dick.
Putting, yeah, he's the worst. He's the worst. You know about Songbird?
No. Well, we haven't even
Do
gotten
you know
to the
about
story
Songbird?
Yet. You've destroyed my premise here.
I haven't destroyed your premise. I just want to say Michael Bay hiring Billy Bob Thornton to play like the salty fucking driller named Truman with his last name Truman. Just that goes against.
To be
against,
fair, I think Billy Bob wasn't a driller. I think he was one of the government NASA folks.
I fucking, Armageddon sucks. Go on. What are we? What is it? We.
You were all
you
laughing
tell me?
In 1998, but it turns out here we are in the year of our Lord 2021, and our friend Z Mansfield, Synergy himself,
yeah,
posting an article from Gizmodo about a new study from NASA, no less, NASA themselves, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Center for Near Earth Orbit Studies.
right down the street from me. If I don't like this story, I'm going to go knock on their door.
Go knock on their door. Go and knock on their door. Every 2 years, they do an asteroid impact simulation.
Oh, God.
At the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Of course they do. What's the latest one? Latest one that's going to hit us?
The exercise simulates the idea of detecting an asteroid headed for Earth.
Right.
With, you know, about a decade of lead time, because that's likely what would happen.
Yeah.
And what are we going to do about it? Are we going to send up a rocket and try to nudge it off of its trajectory? Yeah, we're actually doing that. We're actually testing that. In fact, in the year 2022, next year, October 2nd, 2022, Dimorphos, a spacecraft that NASA has launched a part of the DART mission, is going to try to knock. Oh, excuse me. No. The spacecraft is not called Dimorphos. Dimorphos is the asteroid. The DART mission will send a spacecraft to smash into Dimorphos on October 2nd, 2022, in hopes of altering the asteroid's speed and trajectory, just to test if we can do it.
God, so we're doing Dimorphos that. Dimorphos is such a good name for an evil asteroid.
Dimorphos.
They really
the cool thing about Dimorphos is that it's an asteroid, but then it's also a robot. You can change it into a robot if you bend it right.
It's right in the name, Dimorphos.
So we are doing that, but no, this year's simulation was not a simulation where we had 10 years to prep a mission to nudge the trajectory of the planet destroying asteroid. No. This year, the simulation was, what if we detected it mere months before it was going to impact Earth?
A stamper situation, an Armageddon, a deep impact.
Classic.
A Fifth Element.
Stamper situation.
Now, are they testing? Now, they're doing an Armageddon. They're doing a deep impact. Are they doing a full Fifth Element test where the asteroid is actually a malevolent force with thoughts of its own?
A Galactus?
Sort of a Galactus, but really more an amorphous concept of evil that could be destroyed by the power of love.
Ooh.
Are they planning for that?
I'm suggesting that you walk down the street, knock on the door, and pitch that idea, because maybe it just needs an outside the box thinker like yourself to nudge them in that direction. You know what I'm saying?
That's the thing people don't understand about that movie, Jeff, is that Mila Jovovich, Lilu, is not she's not actually the Fifth Element. The Fifth Element is love.
Fifth Element is love. Yeah.
Come on.
We all know that.
It's a deep movie. It's not as deep as Armageddon, but it's pretty good.
It's not as deep as Deep Impact.
So this is,
that's right in the title.
We have often heard that if we found out about an object in near orbit or an object that was heading for us,
yeah,
we've heard a couple of things. We've heard by the time we actually knew, it might be too late. We've also heard by the time we see it. We've also heard that, you know, maybe we could see it, but we would not have time to prep. This is something that's hurtling through space at hundreds of thousands of miles an hour potentially. And how do we stop it? Could we stop it?
We talked about the mitigation strategy. Mitigation is nudging it off of its earthbound trajectory. Mitigation requires a lot of lead time, years of lead time. It needs the asteroid to be far enough away that a small nudge, small push, can veer it away from impacting Earth. But if we
now, here's why Deep Impact was bad. Deep Impact was bad because they had enough time to construct the giant underground cities.
Yeah.
But they just came up with it. They were just like, no, we've got enough space for the giant underground city and it works. And it's like, something tells me you could have done a little something more about this rock if you had all that time to build the giant underground city. Okay, go on. Elijah Wood was perfect though.
As he always is.
As he always is.
Yes. So mitigation requires lots of lead time. If we don't have that kind of lead time, as was this simulation, the only other... Well, not the only other, but the Armageddon strategy is known as disruption. This is blow the fucker up. So that is what That is what one Full physicist stamper. By the name of Patrick King from Johns Hopkins University, he decided to use his PhD thesis while a student at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory
It's a good lab.
Yeah. To write a software program called Spheral, which could model what would happen if we stuck a nuke onto an asteroid and set the fucker off.
This guy just got caught playing asteroids. This dude just got caught playing games at work.
No, and they're like, I'm doing my working on my thesis.
Well, okay, you're working at your thesis. Your thesis is what am I looking at? It looks like a spaceship that's firing at asteroids.
It is a spaceship that is firing at asteroids. It is firing nuclear warheads at asteroids in the event that we need to do that.
Well, okay. I'm going to need you to send a copy of that to my office so I can verify your calculations and your IP address if there's multiplayer.
There's a two-player mode. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
So this guy simulated the effects of a 1 megaton bomb ignited near the surface of a 328-foot-long asteroid. That's a 100-meter...
Fucking blew it up.
100-meter asteroid.
That's what the simulation says, is it fucking blew it up.
Blew that shit up. But the problem, of course, Anthony, with this theory that, of course, the documentary Armageddon does not get into is that if you blow up the asteroid, what are you effectively doing? You're creating millions of smaller asteroids that will...
It's a Smallville situation.
Yeah. You're creating way more problems. Maybe they're not quite the size of that problem, but there's still lots of problems. It's shrapnel headed toward Earth.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing is okay, this is not something that's going to hit the Earth and immediately disrupt tides and orbits and all kinds of the stuff that we think it would or kick up so much dust that we cause effectively an ice age, like none of that stuff. But we still don't want 100 slightly smaller fucking asteroids hitting the Earth.
100 more
that ain't
like
great.
More like 100,000, more like 100 million. I mean, you know how many bits and pieces will strike the Earth in that situation. Well, that's exactly.
But we're only worried about the big boys, though.
Well, we're worried about big boys and smaller big boys. We're worried about a number of boys.
Okay,
but.
We're worried about any number of boys at any time.
You should always be worried
about
boys.
Are they on our lawn? What are they doing? What are they doing out by the mailbox?
Keep an eye on those boys. Are they big? Are they small? It doesn't matter. Keep an eye on the boys. So they ran this simulation multiple times with asteroids traveling along 5 distinct orbits. And shockingly, they found the results were very encouraging. For every single asteroid they tested, nuclear strikes performed only months in advance of an impact served to significantly reduce the volume of incoming material. So it wasn't
I'm going to go ahead and play my duh card. I know we don't play the duh card very often, but every once in a while, you got to play the duck card.
Well, I
don't
think
it's
good.
If a big rock is heading towards you and it's got months until it hits and you blow up the big fucking rock and change the trajectory of all the rock bits by blowing it up, of course it helps.
Well,
the big rock isn't coming towards you anymore.
Okay, that you may have intuited that, but I would intuit that, yes, you blow up the big rock, but
yeah.
The mass...
Fuck yeah, you do.
The mass of that rock is
USA.
It's still so close to Earth's orbit that all of that mass is still
months away.
But it's still going to
months
impact
away.
Earth.
And, yeah. Not and deeply, found, not a deep impact.
Not a deep impact, but it'll still impact Earth and cause massive destruction. And actually, that was the prevailing wisdom is, you know, if you blow it up, yes, it is not one big impact, but the amount of mass is still going to impact the Earth, and it's a futile effort.
That's why we're the only place you need to get your science news, because science is a feeling. And I think we all knew that if you blew up the big rock, these eggheads with their numbers and their computers got in the way of what I know to be true and what you know to be true, which is if something is heading toward, and this is what we all know as Americans, okay? If you're not American, take off your headphones. You're not supposed to be listening to this podcast anyway. This is an American podcast by Americans and for Americans. And what we know about America, what we know here in America, is if something's heading for you and you blow it up, it's not your problem anymore, baby. Problem solved.
Yeah, just blow it up and make it
USA, Armageddon, Michael Bay, Pearl Harbor. No,
I think
wait.
You took the wrong takeaway from this. No, but listen to this, Anthony. Listen to this. I don't think this was intuitive. I think this is genuinely surprising.
Okay.
They said, for a 100-meter object, that's 328 feet long, that's projected to hit Earth.
Yeah.
If you
blow... Is that going to do a lot of damage?
Yes.
100 meters?
Yes.
What's 100 meters going to do?
328 feet? It's big.
Yeah.
It's going to...
No, I mean, it's big. What's it going to do, though? That's not like...
Well, they don't go into the specifics, but I think one could assume bad things.
Sure.
Power outages.
It just seems small. Earth's pretty big, dude.
Yeah, it doesn't take much.
Particularly America.
Doesn't take much to ruin us, as you'll note, with the whole climate change issue. Okay, listen to this.
What climate change issue?
Mm-hmm. 100-meter object, blow it the fuck up with a 1-megaton bomb.
Love it.
Only a month before it's going to impact Earth.
Yeah.
We can prevent 99% of the impacting mass from hitting Earth.
Baby, why just send up a megaton? We got bigger than that.
Some simulated outcomes, including scenarios in which 99.9% of the asteroid's mass missed Earth, were when you nuke it 2 months in advance. All we need is an extra month, and we get to 99.9% of the mass not even hitting Earth at all.
And that's why our tax dollars need to keep going to Space Force. Space Force, Bruce, is the most important part of the armed forces right now, which, number one, we need all the armed forces and we need them all to be as big as they are, but we need maybe even bigger. And we need Space Force to be the biggest of them all. And what I want is I want Steve Carell and I want John Malkovich and I want Ben Schwartz
Bruce Willis's. I want multiple Bruce Willis's.
They're not part of Space Force.
Give me Bruce Willis.
I'm talking multiple about Tawny Newsome. I'm talking about everybody up there in their turrets in the Space Force firing megaton bombs in all directions.
All the time.
All the time.
Just to be safe.
And if they ever get close to anything, they're programmed to explode.
Just blanket the sky in nukes is what you're saying.
It's for our own good, Jeff.
Listen to this.
What do you
want to
get hit by? You just told me you're afraid of a 300-foot rock.
Well, I'm about to tell you that.
And you don't want the nuclear. You don't want the nuclear umbrella. It's you're saying one thing, but you really want another. This is typical liberal bullshit.
Uh huh.
You want to be safe from the 300. Oh, save me from the 300 from the 300-foot rock. But you don't want to do what needs to be done to get saved.
I'm glad
we
finally have both sides to this podcast. Finally, after 650 episodes. So there are scenarios in which even larger asteroids.
Larger than 300 feet?
Larger than 328 feet.
Do they exist?
Yes. They,
how big? Like 400?
Yeah. You could, if we had 6 months prior to impact,
yeah,
nuking the big boys.
The ones that are like a mile long, stuff like that.
You can still eliminate 99% of their total mass.
Yeah, you dude.
Avoid
the
it.
The earlier
Earth.
You blow something up, the quicker it's blown up.
Well, it's about you're diminishing all of this. I think this is surprising because everybody thought that if you blow up an asteroid, it doesn't matter. It's just going to rain death from above. And these guys are saying, no, man.
Who thought that?
Everybody thought that. They all laughed in 1998. They all laughed at Bruce Willis.
Then why did Billy Bob Truman send up those brave men and women? Let me tell you something. Here's what we know, because this to me, it's funny that this was the, if I'm going to be honest and serious to where this bit is coming from, we all know that any asteroid, any space debris that is under a certain size is mostly going to burn up and shrink upon the entry to the atmosphere, right? That's something that we know. You know, when a 300-foot asteroid hits, I mean, yes, it will be dangerous. It's going to be smaller than 300 feet when it hits. Some of it's going to burn up, break off. You're going to have those smaller impacts. But I mean, just watch Smallville. I'm semi kidding, but I'm only semi kidding. But like what I mean is, you're breaking the table in a game of pool, right? Like right. If everything's heading towards you, or whatever, if it's in one thing and you hit it, it's going to go off in 100 million different directions after right. It breaks off.
But right. We thought
the earlier you do that, the more directions it goes in and the less likely it is to continue on that straight line. Why was this not the prevailing thought?
The prevailing thought was, quote, by making several fragments instead of one single impactor, it's possible that we multiply the threat. And the thought was not that the worry was that the concussive force of the nuclear explosion would not be sufficient to spread the debris far enough away that Earth's orbit wouldn't still bring it into our planet and destroy
us. You might get a couple of dead like me's. You know? You get a couple of dead like me's. We're all out of nowhere. A rock hits them.
Yeah.
Brian Fuller.
Actually, there was somebody else posted a story that really shocked me. It wasn't really a story for the show, but it was in our Discord in the Cool Science News channel. There was a story of a woman who woke up. It kind of brings both of our stories together. She woke up at 3 a.m. and saw a hole in her ceiling and a hole in her pillow next to her. And embedded in that hole was a space rock. She literally like was inches away from being impaled, killed by space debris.
What would that do to you? What would that not what would it do if it hit you? What would waking up in that situation do to you, Jeff Cannata?
I mean, you know, I'm sort of somebody that believes in the wild coincidences of the universe not really adding up to anything in particular. This story. A British Columbian woman, this is A. Tomlinson posted this, British Columbian woman awakes to a hole in her roof and a space rock on her pillow. There's pictures of it too. She was grateful. She said, I just have a renewed sense of gratitude every day that I'm still alive. I'm sure I'd feel that too.
Yeah.
But it's just chance. It's just pure wild. It's the kind of thing
but it's a wild reminder, this is bound to happen
at some point, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I'm not saying it's like... you know, I wouldn't take it as some sort of, we're not leaning towards divine sign or anything, but, you know, even though we think about stuff like that, where it's like the universe is a bunch of wild random chance and like anything could happen at any time, that's an abstract thought.
Yeah.
A fucking space rock nearly killing you in the middle of the night and landing next to your pillow, giving you a little kiss at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I would be fucked for days, I think.
Yeah. I mean, probably I would too.
I would be fucked up for days.
Also,
I'd
just be sitting. A roofer?
Hole? Well, I rent, so somebody would have to come fix it. But, but like, I would be, that would be the sort of thing where I feel like weeks later, I would be like out at lunch with a friend and we would just be talking or whatever. And just in the middle, I'd be like, they'd be like, yeah. And so, you know, this guy I worked today was like, blah, blah, blah. And I told him, I was like, I nearly got hit by a fucking space rock.
Yeah.
Like I would just scream it every once in a while for like weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be Asteroid Boy. All your friends would call you Asteroid Boy.
Oh, I'd love to be Astro Boy.
Yeah. So here's, I pulled up this, this article. It's, there's an interview with her, this woman, her name is, Ms. Hamilton. She says, the only other thing I can say is that life is precious. And you could be gone at any moment, even when you think you're safe and secure in your bed. And then the interviewer says, they asked her if she has plans to take up astrology or stargazing, which, of course, like this local news team would ask that. And she says,
about astrology?
Astrology is what
they asked
wrote.
About astrology.
Yeah. Astrology, and not astronomy. Astrology.
No, astrology and stargazing. They asked if she went and got her fucking star chart drawn up after this.
Yeah. Because if, you know, cool. if you're a Pisces, maybe you wouldn't get hit by, you
know? Very cool. Well, the whole reason the rock even went through her roof is because Mercury's in retrograde right now.
Of course.
Now.
Yeah. Well, we all know that. But she says, no, she said, that's enough for one lifetime, I think.
No. I don't know anything about what tried to kill me, and I will never learn. Good day.
Good day.
I mean, I respect it. I respect the hell out of it.
I mean, to her, in her defense, what are the odds of this happening twice? You know what I'm saying?
There's no way it's going to happen again. Now, do you keep the rock? Do you bring it in to be studied?
Hell yeah. Oh man, that's what I would do. I would not only keep the rock, I would hire somebody to tell me exactly how old it is. I mean,
yeah.
That might be really cost prohibitive. Who knows how much that costs to get it? But it would be cool if you could get it aged and go, I was almost killed by something 3 billion years old or something. You know, that'd be wild. Well,
yeah, I'd what love to have it. I'd love to have, like, go to a, you know, I would imagine, you know, this is one of those things where in the movies they just go to a local university, you know, and you're just like, hey, scrape off a piece of this rock.
Dr. Billy Bob Thornton is there ready to help.
Dr. Billy Bob Truman is going to tell you, but you know, like see if you can get it carbon dated and see what the
mineral composition of it is.
Yeah. Geologists could tell you what it was. Yeah. And then of course go to your psychic.
Yeah. And then you go and you see, find out, you know,
and see if its vibrations are compatible with yours.
If it means he really loves you.
If a space rock lands in your pillow after the new moon.
So I spent all this time trying to get you to be excited about the fact that we can nuke asteroids, and all you care about is the rock that almost hit the pillow lady.
Buddy, are you not hearing me when I tell you how excited I am about the potential of blowing things up with nuclear bombs?
Yeah.
I'm just saying it makes sense to me, and I can't believe it didn't make sense to these scientists.
Yeah. I do think, though, that even 99% mitigation of this effect is pretty good, but 1% is still a lot of pillow ladies, you know?
That's a dead like me for sure.
Yeah.
You get one dead like me out of that.
Yeah.
But, I don't know.
Can't make an omelet, I guess.
I think for me, the big thing is, the thing that I worry about with this is, are we doing enough to... I know there's an entire agency and there's an entire part of NASA that like just looks for... collisions and potential collisions. Mm. And the thing that I'm the most worried about is not can we blow up rock, it's how far out can we see problematic rock.
Yeah.
Because from what I understand, that's the weak point of this entire process.
Exactly. And that's exactly what, you know, the surprising thing is you'll read these stories where scientists just noticed an asteroid coming toward Earth. It's, you know, space is big. And there's
space
a lot of different
big, dude.
Angles that they can come at us from. So that's why they got to do these every 2 years.
They can come at him from a 45 degree angle.
Yeah.
They can come at you from a 70 degree angle.
Yeah. Keep going.
And come at you from a 135 degree angle. Come at you from a 227 degree angle.
You got to keep your head on a swivel.
You got to keep your head on a swivel.
There's obtuse angles. There's acute angles.
Yeah. Where's it coming from?
There's right angles.
And let me tell you something. Something comes at you, we get hit by that rock, that's a wrong angle. That's a very wrong angle.
That's,
you don't need
one
to be AJ Frost to know that. Because AJ Frost didn't know anything. He was a driller. He didn't know anything about space.
He just was in love with Grace Stamper so much, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I just was
maybe
with Tyler.
Maybe when you close your eyes, maybe we can fall asleep and I miss you, babe.
Now, are you adding a maybe on the beginning of those lines?
I wasn't sure
lines?
Of the lyrics. I wasn't
maybe
sure.
We can close our eyes. Maybe we can fall asleep.
Isn't there a maybe? There's no maybe. It's baby. It's baby. It's not maybe, right? It's baby. Baby, when you close your eyes? Maybe. I don't know. Chances are good that I'm going to miss you, babe.
Oh my God, maybe we can close our eyes. Maybe we can fall asleep.
It's just a suggestion.
Let me tell you something. It brings the two stories together. maybe we can close our eyes. Maybe we can fall asleep if we're lucky.
I just wish that there could have been a song in Armageddon by the KLF, you know?
Sure.
Would have been better.
I mean, the KLF makes everything better.
Asteroid is going to rock yet.
I think that's our cue. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Synergy Mansfield and Jenna B. and A. Tomlinson for sending in those stories to the Discord that we talked about today. You can join the Discord once again at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns, but you can also send us stories at wehaveconcernsshow@gmail.com. We'll read them. We're checking that email. We're checking that email, right?
Yeah, mostly the Discord, but yes.
And remember, if you are a patron, there's you've got some bonus goodies coming this week, so be on the lookout for those, and we will talk to you soon. Assuming there's not an asteroid that we are not seeing right now.
Is it going to be at 48 degree angle?
Think about that at 3 a.m. tonight.